Blog Talk Radio.
Today on Sports Kingdom, we discuss Manuel being fired by the Philadelphia Phillies, the LA Dodgers' impressive streak, retiree Marion Bettoli, the PGA Championship, and the Arena Bowl. Don't go anywhere because Sports Kingdom starts right now. Hello and welcome to Sports Kingdom. I'm your host, Julian Brower the King, and today is August 19th, 2013. I apologize if we weren't on yesterday, but we are here today. Today I am happy to be joined by co-host JJ Schock from Bleacher Report and Syracuse University. Welcome, JJ.
Hey, Julian. Happy to be on today.
Happy to be on as well, as we'll get to Charlie Manuel, the Dodgers, Marion Bettoli, the PGA Championship, and the Arena Bowl. So before we get to all that, the number to the show is 646-716-5733. Once again, 646-716-5733. The chat room is open, so chat up while it's open. The email to the show is skbtradio@gmail.com. And on that note, we will begin right off with baseball. So Charlie Manuel, after 8 seasons, was fired by the Philadelphia Phillies. Charlie Manuel led the Philadelphia Phillies to 2 World Series appearances. He won the 2008 World Series championship with the Philadelphia Phillies. And now Ryan Sandberg takes over as interim manager, which leads me to ask you, JJ, but was this the right time?
I think that this is absolutely the right time. You know, Charlie Manuel is a fan favorite in Philadelphia. There's no denying that. He came in, and a lot of people were questioning the decision to hire him after Larry Bowa left. But he immediately brought success to the team. He came in during a stretch when the Atlanta Braves were just ridiculously dominant, won the division something like 14 years in a row. And he came into a tough situation, but he quickly turned the team around. Philadelphia is a tough city to get behind you, but he managed to do it. He brought the team to the promised land. He became the winningest manager in team history. He got to 1,000 career victories, and he was supposed to have a ceremony for those victories. The team fired him on the day that he was supposed to have the ceremony, and obviously the ceremony didn't happen because of it. I think that this is the right time because the Phillies are just falling apart right now. They're 21 and a half games back in the NL East. They are just, they've been falling apart all year. They're in fourth place behind the New York Mets, which no one saw coming this year. It's just been a huge disappointment all around. And you can make the case that, yes, Charlie's been dealing with some, with average players at best. There have been a lot of injuries. But the thing is, he's also not lighting a fire under any players. He's not motivating them enough to win and to go out there and compete every night. We all knew this was coming. The writing was on the wall for months. And I think giving Sandberg a chance to prove himself in these last 40-some-odd games, it's just a great move by the Phillies to see if he could, in fact, be a long-term answer.
Yeah, good points there, JJ. But I want to say I'm kind of 50-50 with this. I'm kind of 50-50 with this of Charlie Manuel leaving. One side of me is telling me that the Phillies gave up on Charlie Manuel too early, and the other side is telling me that it's a good opportunity to see what Ryan Sandberg can do for the remainder of the season. Now, with Ryan Sandberg, I think Ryan Sandberg can possibly be a decent coach, but I don't think he can manage the personalities in the clubhouse as well as Charlie Manuel did.
I'm going to have to disagree with you there. Sandberg is a Hall of Famer. The players all know how much he contributed to the game and how good he was. I think everyone's going to realize that this is a guy who they can all learn from, whether in one way or another. And I think just by being so good when he played, he immediately commands the respect of players.
Yeah. Ryan Sandberg, once again, I think he can be a decent coach. But I think he's never had any kind of personality. And don't get me wrong, I think he can be a decent coach, but I just think he hasn't ever had that personality that just stood out. And I don't know if he's going to be able to manage the personalities in the clubhouse as well as Charlie Manuel. But I digress. Charlie Manuel. What a wonderful career he had while he was with Philadelphia. Like I said, he led the Philadelphia Phillies to 2008 and 2009 World Series. Let's not forget, but his mother died during the 2008 NLCS. It was pretty heartbreaking for Charlie, but you know, he had to go out and do his job. He did his job absolutely to the best of his capability. Although it's a shame how it comes to an end this way, because the Philadelphia front office, in my opinion, does not know what's doing.
I agree that Sandberg, well, going back to your point about Sandberg, I agree that he hasn't dealt with these personalities yet. I think that's why they brought him in at this point, because there's still 40-some-odd games to see what he can do and to see if he can be more than an interim. Going back to your point about the front office, we know that this was a tough decision for the Phillies. When Ruben Amaro came out and announced that Charlie Manuel had been fired, he was not holding back tears. He was crying. He was showing so much emotion for a coach that he truly cared about. He really bonded with over these 8 years or so. And obviously it was a tough move. I do think that the time for change has come. The team is getting old. They're going to have to clean house both on the field and off. And I think getting rid of Charlie is that first step. Seeing what Sandberg can do is a great move for the team, because if he does prove to be as good a manager in the MLB as he has been at Lehigh Valley, then there's a chance that he could be a long-term option. And I think giving him that chance is a smart move.
Yeah. Referring back to that first step, I can totally agree with that. It's just, I'm not sure if Ruben Amaro and the whole rest of the front office wants to really clean the house up. And what I mean by that is keeping the same core intact. They've had the same guys from 2008-2009, such as Chase Utley, Ryan Howard, Jimmy Rollins, Carlos Ruiz. They've just had these guys for many years, and they're aging. I give them credit where credit's due. They've brought up guys like Dominic Brown, Cody Ashe, and Darren Ruff. But the Phillies front office, they're not doing what's best for their future, which is trading away some of their valuable talent now in return for some top prospects.
That's absolutely
they have
a great point.
They have a depleted farm system, as we know. I mean, they do have some prospects like Jesse Biddle, Franco, and I can name a whole bunch of others. But the Phillies don't know what they're putting themselves in. In my opinion, I don't think this core can ever make it back to the World Series, which is why I say they should at least trade away one or two players from their core, maybe like Jimmy Rollins or Carlos Ruiz, just so the Phillies can get some top prospects and sustain their credibility.
Yeah, that's absolutely a fair point. We saw that at the trade deadline, where Ruben Amaro had this great opportunity to go out and trade guys for a huge amount of interest in them. The Yankees were looking at Michael Young and Carlos Ruiz. If you package those two together, you could get yourself a top prospect. The Boston Red Sox were looking at Cliff Lee, and we know since Lee still has a few years left on his contract that he would have warranted a great prospect. I was saying that the team should be inquiring about Xander Bogaerts, who's actually called up to the majors today and who I think is going to be a perennial all-star. The team had so many opportunities at the deadline just to trade away the guys that they have now, even to trade away Utley instead of signing him to a long deal, and they blew it. Amaro just didn't make up his mind in time whether they were buyers or sellers. It came down to the fact where on July 31st, he did not have any options. He was either going to have to sell six or seven players in one day or have to buy two or three more, and he just couldn't get it done. So I agree that's a bad move by the Phillies. And Amaro really needs to think about where this team is going. Signing Utley to a long-term deal, in my opinion, was a big mistake. He's a fan favorite, and he's still producing, but he's had problems with injuries in the past, and he's not going to be the same player 2 years from now. The thing is, the Phillies blew their opportunity, though. And even though they did blow that opportunity, as you brought up, there's no way that this core is bringing the team to the World Series. If they're 21 and a half games back in the division, there's no way that this team can make a run in the playoffs, or let alone reach the World Series. Right now, the team needs to figure out what it's doing, and what it's doing should be trying to completely start over, as we're seeing the White Sox do now with their new GM, Rick Hahn. I think what Amaro should be doing is getting rid of as many players as possible, either during the offseason or next deadline, trying to get the prospects that they need. But also, I think that getting rid of Charlie was a good move, because he is also kind of a relic of the past, and he's just not what the team needs right now. They need a new manager, and I think going out and firing Charlie and promoting Sandberg was a good move, because that could be that first step that they need to take.
Just by signing some of these guys, such as Michael Young, Delmon Young, and Lance Nix through free agency to surround your core, isn't going to do much from my perspective. And I'll say this again: this is none of Charlie Manuel's fault, but Ruben Amaro's. Ruben Amaro, I feel, really needs to sit down and think about the future of the Philadelphia Phillies. He can't keep on going out on the market and spending money on guys. He has to think about the future of the Philadelphia Phillies, or it's going to just wind up like the Houston Astros. Ed Wade is in that front office now for the Philadelphia Phillies, and I'm not liking how things are shaping out.
That's a great point. And I agree with you that Amaro needs to take a heavy portion of the blame. Manuel did deserve some because he wasn't motivating the players as a manager should. But right now, I think this really rests on Ruben Amaro Jr.'s shoulders. Okay, he was the one who messed up at the trade deadline. He was the one who messed up in free agency and thought the answer to getting a team younger was signing Delmon Young. A player who, in his contract, needed different incentives just for playing because they didn't know if he was going to be physically fit and able to do so. So I think that Amaro, it sounds a little bit rash, but I think Amaro actually needs to be fired. He's proven that he's the best GM in team history, bringing in guys like Roy Oswalt, Hunter Pence, Cliff Lee, and just bring this team to the top. But at the same time, I think his inability to go younger and to get rid of the players that the fans love is a sign of weakness. Okay, GMs are just like us. They're just like fans. And I think Amaro has become so nostalgic of these players that make up the core of the Phillies right now that he's unwilling to trade them. And that's a terrible move for the team. I think he could be trying to hang on to the success that he had with Charlie and the two of them brought to the Phillies over these last 8 years or so. But that's just not what the team needs right now. And the team, if Amaro can't turn things around quickly, the team may need a new GM.
The worst move Ruben Amaro ever made was when he gave Ryan Howard that gigantic contract. And that gigantic contract is the reason why no team wants Ryan Howard.
Yeah, that huge contract was a mistake. And the second he signed it, I'm sure many fans were even second-guessing him, that he was just too eager to bring back a player like Howard and to keep the same core. And he really made a mistake when he was negotiating. If Howard was getting that kind of offer from another team, he should have just let him walk. And that was a mistake on his part. And I think even rivaling that move could be his inability to do anything at the trade deadline. The team had so many different options. They could have gotten out and just got a few players and tried to put together a run, or it could have blown everything up. The worst move that he could have made was nothing, and that's exactly what he did. So these last few years, he's just been a terrible GM after being so good for so long, and the Phillies really need to reconsider whether or not he's the guy they want in the front office.
Yeah, well, this leads me to this question, JJ, but should the Phillies fire Ruben Amaro?
Yeah, I really think that it comes down to how he performs during free agency this offseason. He's shown time and again that he's been making mistakes over these last few years, and it does sound a little hasty after he brought in so many talented players and made so many great moves for the team at the deadline, but he simply is not adapting. And when a GM doesn't adapt to the times, that's when a team becomes weak.
Yeah. I want to mention this, but Pat Gillick had such a special bond with Charlie Manuel at the time he was running things in Philadelphia. I mean, just an incredible general manager, Pat Gillick. He went to the World Series at the Toronto Blue Jays and then was able to take the Philadelphia Phillies to the 2008 World Series. I mean, just an incredible general manager. He's a special consultant now in the Philadelphia Phillies front office, but getting back to Ruben Amaro, I feel is just not that guy. He's just not as good as Pat Gillick was. And if you want to know me, I think the Phillies should give Scott Profarock a chance at becoming the new general manager of the Philadelphia Phillies. He's currently the assistant GM of the Philadelphia Phillies. I don't see why not, giving the guy a chance since he got to learn some great things out of Andy MacPhail, who used to be a great manager and led the Detroit Tigers to a World Series at one point. I mean, Scott Profarock may just be that guy. If you would have to agree, JJ.
Yeah, he absolutely could be that guy. Just like how Charlie was let go, Amaro might be let go, and we could see Sandberg and their assistant GM take over. The team is in pretty bad shape right now, and Amaro just simply has not done anything to help them. So I think giving their assistant a chance, even just during the December signings for free agency and during the offseason, could be very telling. And if he proves to be a good GM, maybe they keep him around for a few years just to see what he can do. He's been around for a lot of Amaro's best deals. And just dating back to 2008 when he brought in Joe Blanton to help the team win the World Series in 2009 when he brought Cliff Lee in and helped the team get to the World Series. 2010 was Roy Oswalt. 2011 was Hunter Pence. But since then, he hasn't really made any moves, and the team needs a new GM who can adapt. And if they think that the assistant GM is the guy who can do that, then by all means, give the kid a chance.
Charlie Manuel was the best manager in Philadelphia Phillies history, with the exception of Connie Mack. Charlie, like I said, had no fault in being fired, but it had to come down to these terms, all due to the fact that Ruben Amaro hasn't been able to get the job done. And when I say that, I also point the finger to the offense and bullpen out on the field. I think the bullpen has been extremely mediocre, and the offense just hasn't been producing. As you saw this weekend against the Los Angeles Dodgers, they weren't really the offense weren't really able to pick up runs.
Absolutely. And I understand that the Dodgers are the hottest team in baseball and that we're going to get to that a little later. But when you go 21 and a third innings without scoring a run, you have a problem. The team only scored 3 runs in 3 games. Somehow they came away with Sandberg's first victory as a manager. But the offense has just been terrible. The brightest spots are Dominic Brown and Darren Ruff, who weren't even on the team a few years ago, which to me is another sign that the core needs to be let go and the team needs to start rebuilding around guys like Brown and Ruff and Cody Ashe. And he made the point that Manuel is arguably the best manager in team history, and there's no denying that. He's absolutely the winningest. He brought one of their 2 World Series titles to Philadelphia. And although you can make the case that it was not his fault, it was his time to go.
Yeah. You were just talking about the core, and it led me to this question. But JJ, what do you feel of the Phillies extending Chase Utley's contract?
As I said before, I think that it does seem to be a very nostalgic move. Utley is still performing right now, but in 2 or 3 years, he's not going to be the same player. He's going to be a mediocre second baseman at best just because he's aging and he's dealt with injuries in the past. And he's going to eventually hit that decline, and it's going to hit him hard. We've seen it with guys like Ryan Howard and Roy Halladay. where once they hit a certain age, they just can't perform anymore. And I think that same thing is going to happen with Utley. Obviously, it wasn't as big a mistake as it was when Amaro signed Ryan Howard to that monstrous deal that really set the Phillies back for the next few seasons, not just the year he signed it. But I still think that signing Utley could be a mistake. I personally would have signed him to a one-year extension, told him after that, if you want the type of money that he was asking for, he needs to keep producing. I would have given him incentives. I would have given him bonuses if he hit certain plateaus. But the fact that Amaro signed him to a contract with so much guaranteed money, I think it's just a mistake.
He's arguably one of the best second basemen in Philadelphia Phillies history of all time. But like you said, JJ, the future does matter. And just to wrap it up on the Philadelphia Phillies, they have to firmly go over the future of this ball club, because the way things are going now, things are going downhill. Things are going pretty downhill for the Philadelphia Phillies, especially attendance. Attendance has been dropping, and that is not a good thing when attendance has been at its finest for the past couple years.
Yeah, that's a good point about attendance. That's how the team makes a lot of its money. That's how it can afford to go out and sign these big deals. But they're signing them with the wrong players, and fans just don't want to go to the game anymore. The team isn't built to win now. It's certainly not built to win in the future, and the Phillies really need to have a makeover very soon.
Yep, but Ryan Sandberg once again is the new interim manager for the Philadelphia Phillies. We'll see how it goes with Ryan Sandberg. I'm glad this is only the first step in their process, but they have to make many more steps ahead.
I'm sorry, you broke up there.
Yeah, what's that?
Sorry, you broke up there for a second. I missed that last point.
Oh, yeah, I was just saying Ryan Sandberg is now the interim manager. And it's only the first step of the process, but like we've been saying all along, but there are many more steps that have to be made moving forward.
Absolutely.
So, all right. Glad we talked about the Philadelphia Phillies and Charlie Manuel. We're going to move forward to the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Phillies broke the Dodgers' impressive 10-game winning streak, but we're going to talk about the LA Dodgers anyways. The LA Dodgers have been winning at such a phenomenal rate. From what I heard, lastly, the Dodgers have won their last 42 games out of 50. This was a team that started the year on the bottom of their division. They have climbed their way up, and now they're just surprising the whole baseball world, which leads me to ask you, JJ, what do you think about the performance of the LA Dodgers?
The Dodgers have just been incredible over these last 50 games or so. They're 42-9 in their last 51 games after losing last night, and they became the first team to go 39-8 in a 47-game stretch since 1951. It took 62 years for a team to do that, but this team has been able to pull it off. And as you said, they had the 10-game winning streak. The thing that I'm taking away from this, personally, is that it renews faith in the whole you can buy a championship philosophy. We saw the Yankees doing this for how many years, and they won many of their 27 rings because they were able to buy them. The Dodgers now have the second highest payroll in baseball, only behind the Yankees, and if you take away all the money the Yankees have on the DL right now with Kevin Youkilis and guys who were there for extended periods of time like Curtis Granderson and Alex Rodriguez and Derek Jeter, then you could say that the Dodgers are spending the most money this year. Obviously, they had a slow start to the season. Players weren't performing up to their usual caliber. But you can see now that all the talent on this team is helping them potentially buy another ring. Their outfield is ridiculously stacked with Matt Kemp, Carl Crawford, Andre Ethier, and Yasiel Puig, who's just been playing out of his mind. The infield isn't too shabby either, with Adrian Gonzalez and Hanley Ramirez. The pitching has just been incredible, with Cranky, Ryu, and Kershaw just playing unbelievably well. Ricky Nolasco was also just brought in, and he was pitching well until he got the no decision last night in the loss. So what I'm taking away from this is that if you're prepared to pay, then you can easily get your way into the playoffs and potentially to the World Series.
We are one year forward from the trade that took place between the Boston Red Sox and the LA Dodgers. Adrian Gonzalez, Carl Crawford, and Josh Beckett were sent to the Los Angeles Dodgers, which leads me to ask you, JJ, but how would you evaluate that trade today?
You know, at the time, that was arguably the biggest waiver deal of all time, just because there were so many big-name players involved, and the two teams involved themselves were very, very popular teams. Today, looking back, you can see that the trade obviously went well for both sides. The Dodgers are tied for the second-best record in the NL after going on this historic tear, and the Red Sox have the best record in the American League outside of the Detroit Tigers, who have just been hot as of late and are one game ahead of the Red Sox. So to see both of these teams benefit from this trade and to come back and dominate this year, it's really special to see them, to see two big name teams benefit from a trade that came after July 31st. And I'd personally give both teams an A with the trade. It's helped them both become dominant. And I also think that it shows that waiver trades are not as unimportant as many people make them out to be. You can still make huge trades in August, and I think we're seeing that now.
Yeah, totally. But I think, like you said, JJ, but it's an A. It's an A for both teams. The way Adrian Gonzalez and Carl Crawford have been playing has been pretty good. Carl Crawford, his numbers may be a little down, but he's still doing pretty good with a .289 batting average. And you see Adrian Gonzalez, he has 16 home runs, 76 RBIs, and a .295 batting average. Although the best player and everyone knows this particular player. But Yasiel Puig, ever since the emergence of Yasiel Puig, this team has totally taken off.
Absolutely. He was really the shot in the arm that the team needed. We can talk about how good he is on the field, but also what a head case he is off of it. You may have heard today that he went into the Miami Visitors Clubhouse, stared at the media for 1 second, said, expletive the media, dropping an F-bomb, and walked away. That's just one of the many immature things we've seen him do. But there's no denying that this kid has an unbelievable amount of talent. He was arguably the biggest snub from the All-Star game. And just to see him continue his torrid pace into the second half has been really special. Obviously, I have some issues with how he's handling himself off the field, whether it be ignoring legends like Luis Gonzalez or getting in the middle of that brawl against, I believe, the Arizona Diamondbacks, or calling out Adrian Gonzalez for running too slow he has a lot of issues, but there's no denying that he's come to this team, he's helped them get better, and he's just been a really special player.
Yeah, totally. I could totally agree about the way he's conducted himself off the field. I mean, he's been hanging out with some of the wrong people as of late. But other than that, he's been doing extremely well on the field. Let me quickly ask you, JJ. But do you think he should win the NL Rookie of the Year?
I think in any other year, we wouldn't even have to ask that question. He would be running away with it. But because he was a mid-season call-up and there are just so many talented rookies in the NL this year, it's going to be close. You're seeing guys like Shelby Miller and Jose Fernandez of the Marlins just come in and play incredibly well this year. There are just so many talented rookies, both in the NL and the AL, that it's been a crazy year. I still think that he is the favorite, but there is a little bit of doubt in my mind that he might not win it. He might get snubbed.
I don't mean to get off topic, but I just want to take a second to talk about Will Myers. Will Myers has been incredible. I just can't get over the way he's been playing this year. I think out of all the rookies, out of all the batting rookies, I would have to put Will Myers up there as the number one guy to have a very bright future moving forward. This guy is showing flashes of consistency, and he's just been able to step up and contribute for the Tampa Bay Rays, who are doing very well right now.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Myers. He's just been a phenomenal player. He's not as flashy as Puig because he's not he doesn't have the five tools that Puig has. Puig has a better arm, and he is faster. But he also has a lower baseball IQ, and he makes a lot of mistakes. Myers is just a solid all-around player. I'm looking at his stats right now. He's batting .308 with 9 home runs and 37 RBI in 51 games. He's going to destroy 100 RBI next year. He could hit 30 to 35 home runs without a problem while still batting .300. And at this pace, he's hitting a home run every 5.5 games. So to see him come to Tampa Bay, come back after what was a pretty rough MLB debut, and just play out of his mind, just so well. It's been really impressive, and I'm really glad that we're seeing him finally play.
Yeah, I'm starting to think that the Royals made a bad mistake of letting go Will Myers, but Will Myers is definitely going to be a solid asset of the future for the Tampa Bay Rays. But all right, I want to talk about the Dodgers pitching. Even though a 12-7 record might not define him, Clayton Kershaw has been doing absolutely fantastic with a 1.80 ERA. Just talk about how fantastic he's been doing, and the other guys such as Zach Greinke, Ryu, and Jansen has been able to step up this year in the bullpen. Many were saying that he was going to struggle this season, but he's been able to prove the doubters wrong. So JJ, what do you think about the Dodgers pitching? How they've been able to hold up for the Dodgers?
The pitching has really been the difference maker over this streak, in my opinion. Obviously, the offense has been playing very well, but the pitching has been really overlooked. You talked about Clayton Kershaw being 12-7. That's just an embarrassment. There is no reason that this guy should have 7 losses on the season when he leads the NL in ERA at 1.80, at WHIP at 0.85, which is incredible for a reliever, let alone a starter, and he has the best WAR among NL pitchers at 6.6. He has just been pitching incredibly well. He's first or second in most categories when it comes to pitching. He's second in strikeouts behind Matt Harvey. And I would argue that Kershaw deserves to be the Cy Young winner. Obviously, Matt Harvey is generating a lot of buzz. You can make a case for Adam Wainwright or several other pitchers in the league, including Jose Fernandez, even Patrick Corbin, or even Kershaw's teammate Ryu. But I just think that Kershaw has been incredibly dominant. His fastball has been, his velocity has increased this year from last year. His curveball is breaking a little more, and he's going a little slower and really throwing batters off at the plate. He has just been incredible, and he really leads that staff, despite his record, as you said. I've also been really impressed with Ryu so far, with his 2.84 ERA. He's become one of the better pitchers in the league. He's actually pitching tonight against Jose Fernandez, and just a great pitching battle. But he's really impressed me so far. He's only 26, and this is his first year in America pitching. And to see him come over, sign a massive contract, which also helps the whole buyout championship series, I think that's been really impressive. Granke has been his usual self. He got back to prime form this year. Jansen's been impressive. I think trading for Ricky Nolasco was a great move. He's been playing well since he was brought over. And the pitching has really impressed me so far. Going into the year, we thought that this would be an offensively heavy team. And they're actually very balanced over these last 51 games or so. And if these pitchers continue to pitch like they have been, the Dodgers are a real threat to win the World Series.
Yeah, most definitely. You just talk about how successful they've been, especially when the Dodgers were very close, and I mean very close to firing manager Don Mattingly.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine that he was on the hot seat a few months ago, and now he seems to be one of the calming forces in the clubhouse. He's the one making sure that Puig doesn't get too much attention from the media and isn't doing just stupid things every night. Instead, he's limiting them to one every couple of weeks, which is actually very impressive. I think that Mattingly has been a fantastic manager, especially over this last stretch, and the Dodgers have to be happy that they kept him.
We pretty much touched on every point with the LA Dodgers, but let's just talk about this final thing here. But can the Dodgers make a deep playoff run with the way this team has been playing? They've climbed up through the NL West and have just been impressively winning at such a phenomenal rate. I mean, can they seriously make a deep playoff run?
You know, Julian, the last time I was on, we were talking about the Braves making a deep run to the World Series, and I wasn't sold on them because they really played 500 ball this year outside of their 13-1 start and their 14-game winning streak. So I am excited to see the Dodgers playing as well as they have been. The NL is actually pretty open right now. Obviously, we know that the Braves have a chance. They have the best record. They could very easily clinch home field advantage if the Dodgers start to cool off. The Pirates have been great all year. They lead a tough NL Central. Can never count out the Cardinals. The Reds are even very underrated. But I think with the way the Dodgers have been playing, and especially the way that they've been pitching, I think that they have a great chance to make a deep run and to win the NL pennant this year. I really think that the Dodgers and Detroit Tigers will be the two teams in the World Series this year, and that's going to be a great series.
Oh, wow. Wow. We were just talking about the Atlanta Braves last week, and all of a sudden you're predicting the Dodgers and Tigers to be in the World Series. I'm thinking the Atlanta Braves and Detroit Tigers, believe it or not.
Yeah, and with the Braves, it really comes down to how they're playing in October. They're the streakiest team I've seen all year. They could be a team that wins the World Series. They could be a team that exits in the first round after getting swept by the wild card team if they win home field advantage. So I'm not sold on their inconsistency. If they get hot, you're absolutely right. They could just run through the playoffs without a problem. But I think that the Dodgers have the tools to be much more consistent and to put together a winning streak that eventually brings them to the World Series, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them win it.
But let me say this. The Atlanta Braves have been so consistent throughout the entire season with the LA Dodgers. They weren't consistent in that first quarter, but have managed to climb up. The Atlanta Braves, I feel, have a complete roster. Now, I remember you saying that the Braves don't have that fifth starter. But so what? I think they have a better bullpen than the Los Angeles Dodgers. And I think they have a better offense than the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Los Angeles Dodgers have a few spots in their offense that may affect them in the postseason.
No, I really think that we're going to disagree about this for the rest of the season. The Braves, they had their two runs. They're the big reasons why they're something like 25 games over 500 right now. But if you take them away, they're a 500 team, and 500 teams don't make playoff runs. You could argue that the Braves don't need a fifth starter. That's fine. But do they even have a fourth starter? I mean, their starting pitching has not been as good as advertised this year. And with Tim Hudson going down, they lose one of the guys who was going to be a playoff starter. The Dodgers, on the other hand, if they go to a three-man rotation, who's going to beat them? You've got Kershaw, who has just been untouchable this year. You've got Ryu, who has been phenomenal and really impressive. And then you finish a three-man rotation with Zach Greinke, who's pitching like a Cy Young candidate again. I don't see anyone beating the Dodgers.
We could debate about this all night, JJ, but I think it's time to put to rest. We're gonna get going on Marion Bartoli, but before we get to Marion Bartoli, the number to the show is 646-716-5733 if you want to call in and talk with me and JJ. Now let's get to Marion Bartoli, but Marion Bartoli announced her retirement right after one of her matches during the U.S. Open. Marion Bartoli won the Wimbledon tournament just one month ago. She has trained her whole entire life to be in the position she was in. She was in arguably the best position of tennis after winning her very first major. Marion Bartoli, just to bring up one other point, Marion Bartoli like I said, was a strong trainer, but in the meantime, though, had her father alongside her this whole time up until February. She decided to find a new trainer, which she did, and like I said, she led herself to her first major, which leads me to ask you, JJ, but what do you think about Marion Bartoli announcing her retirement right after winning her very first major?
You know, it was very surprising to hear her say that she's going to retire at the age of 28, and she sounded much more forceful than most players do when they retire at an early age. She has been complaining about chronic injury issues holding her back, whether it be her Achilles or her knee or some other problem. She's really been dealing with an injury-riddled career. And even though she did win Wimbledon this year, that might have been the only chance she's really had to play when she seems to be 100%. So we saw the real Marion Bartoli at Wimbledon, but since then she's really been declining. And honestly, this isn't the first early retirement we've seen in recent years. We've seen Kim Clijsters, Justine Henin, Martina Hingis, just to name a few, who all left in their mid to late 20s, just like Bartoli's doing right now. And most players who retire this early do eventually come back. But even if Bartoli doesn't, it's up to her. It's a very personal decision. She's the one who's dealing with the injury. She's the one who knows what her body can handle. And if she thinks that this is the time to walk away, then by all means, that's her right.
Yeah, I guess you can say that her body has been banged up for quite some time, and I guess she just sees that green light say, and it's time to move forward and retire. It's just a shame after being 1 month removed. She retired right after winning her first major. She surprised us when she won a month ago. And Marion Bartoli, she was a very, very strong trainer, and it's just unfortunate how she's going to hurt herself out of the position, out of the top position she was in all of women's tennis.
Yep, and we've seen players come and go based on injuries, whether they play for a short amount of time or a long amount of time. We've seen too many careers cut short by injuries, and Bartoli is just another one of those players. Seeing her retire at 28, considering how many injuries she's had, her biological age as a tennis player might be more like 40. So I wouldn't be surprised if we never see her return. If she does step away from the game and she thinks that she is 100% healthy and can come back, then by all means, I hope she does. But I do think that this is the end of Marion Bartoli because of those injuries.
Yep, totally. All right. By the way, real quick, you can follow Sports Kingdom on Twitter at sports2_kingdom. There you can find our latest weekly blogs, poll questions, updates, episodes, and plenty more. You can also find us on Facebook by going to www.facebook.com/sportskingdombtr. We're also on Pinterest. You can find us on Pinterest by going to pinterest.com/sportskingdom. Sports Kingdom is on social media, so follow us on social media. All right, so with these remaining minutes, we're gonna quickly move forward to the PGA Championship. Jason Duffner won his first ever major. Jason Duffner, farm boy, has taken his game after legend Ben Hogan. And in fact, Jason Duffner went on to break Ben Hogan's course record during the second round of the PGA Championship. Jason Duffner did extremely well all the way till the end. Had a dogfight with Jim Furyk all the way till the end, and was able to pick up the PGA Championship. So, JJ, what are your thoughts on Jason Duffner winning the PGA Championship?
I was really happy to see Duffner win, especially after he lost in 2011 with that heartbreaking playoff. But really, I think his win comes down to the second and fourth days. We all know he had that incredible second round where he posted a 7-under score, and that's really what got him into the conversation to begin with. And then on the fourth day, on Sunday, he was the only one who really went out there and put in a score that was good enough to win. If you look at the top five finishers from the weekend, he was the only one on Sunday to post a score below even. All the other top five finishers just kind of coasted at the end, and they simply couldn't get it done. Duffner was the one to go out there and say, this is my tournament, this is my championship, and he went out there and he won it himself.
Like I said before, huge dogfight between him and Jim Furyk. There are plenty of others that tried to fight their way up through the leaderboards, but Jason Duffner was the guy who picked up the win. But real quickly, JJ, I want to go over Tiger Woods, but what is taking Tiger Woods forever to win a major?
Yeah, it's been a long time since we've seen Tiger win. He hasn't won one since 2008, and this was his last chance to win one this year. Now we're going to have to see if 2014 has anything different in store for him, but I think he hit a mental block. It's been so long since he won a major that even though he played well this year and won five different events, he could not come into the PGA Championship and prove that he is still as good in majors as he is out of them. He played very well this year. We thought that this could be the year where he finally got that extra major, when he finally got number 15, but it wasn't the case. So he needs to take some time off. Obviously, he needs to keep training, but when you're as good as Tiger Woods is, it's much more of a mental game than anything else. He just needs to relax. He needs to play his game, and hopefully in time we'll see him win 15, 16, 17, or even tie Jack Nicklaus at 18 majors. But right now, that's just not the case.
Yeah, like you said, but we're going to have to wait until next year to see what Tiger can do. Just been a long while since he's picked up a win. So, all right. Let's get down to the final topic, but the Arena Bowl. The Arena Bowl took place in Orlando, Florida. The Arena Bowl featured the Philadelphia Soul and the Arizona Rattlers. These two teams fought up against each other last year and have met once again in the Arena Bowl. Arizona came away with the Arena Bowl. The Philadelphia Soul have been 0-4 through their last meetings with the Arizona Rattlers. Even though the Philadelphia had the number one ranked defense, Arizona was still able to pick up the win. Rod Windsor had an incredible game. Had 10 receptions and a couple touchdowns. He was able to connect along with Nick Davila. Also want to mention Rod Windsor was the MVP of the game. So, final question for you, JJ, and then I'll let you leave. But what do you think of Arizona coming away with the Arena Bowl?
I thought it was impressive how Arizona came away with it this year. Last year, Arizona beat Philadelphia by a score of 72-54, which is just an incredible score. This year, it was a much more defensive game. Arizona only put up 49 points, but their defense stepped up and held Philadelphia to 38. what was even more impressive for me was that the Soul had a chance to win the game after recovering an Arizona fumble at its own 1 yard line. But after Brown broke up that pass on fourth down, it really iced the game. Arizona tacked on a field goal to make it an 11-point game. I was very impressed by the way Arizona was so calm and composed in the final minutes of the game. And to see them come away with a defensive victory, to me, was just very impressive.
Yeah, totally. Such a great offense Arizona has. Number one ranked offense throughout the whole entire season, was able to overcome the number one ranked defense in the AFL, and they did just that. Was their second or third consecutive Arena Bowl appearance, and they have won two of their last three appearances in the Arena Bowl. So this about does it. I want to say one other thing, but the band Kiss is now going to bring an AFL franchise to one of the biggest markets in America, Los Angeles. Kiss is going to have their own AFL franchise called the Los Angeles Kiss. This is sure great for AFL fans. It's sure great for people out in Los Angeles. This is going to be something special because the franchise is going to be named after a band that was truly great. Came out with hit songs such as "I Want to Rock and Roll" and "Detroit Rock City." So I just see that as a great thing. You want to say any last words about that, JJ?
Yeah, I think it's just a good sign to see that Kiss is bringing a franchise to LA, which, as you said, is a huge market. Arena football is a very interesting sport. It's just not getting the exposure that it deserves. And considering how bad of a situation the league was in financially a few years ago, I think just seeing Kiss bring in a new franchise is a huge step for the AFL. And hopefully it's one that will help the league move forward, gain more publicity, and become a permanent feature in American sports.
Yeah, hopefully. The AFL has been in existence for 25-plus years, and I think they can make some progress. I think they can make some progress as long as they keep on doing the right things. So, all right, this has been Sports Kingdom. I want to thank our listeners for tuning in. I've been your host, Julian Bravo the King, and your co-host has been JJ Shock. You can re-listen to this episode on TuneIn, Stitcher, and iTunes. Our next show should be with Dee Lynam of CSN Philly. She's gonna be on it to discuss her broadcasting career in the Philadelphia 76ers, so you won't want to miss out on that. And with that, I'm going to play the show out with one of the top hits from Kiss, Detroit Rock City. So I hope you enjoy, and have a good night, everyone. Peace out.
soul.